listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Good evening and welcome to Nerds Assemble episode 148. I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And this week you've got the delightful jaunt of listening to my voice for a bit more as I take over. And this week we've decided to talk about sci-fi as social issues. As ever, you can find notes for this episode on www.nerdassemble.co.uk, and you can also tweet us right now, live at Nerds Podcast. And this episode will be also available on iTunes and Stitcher. And don't forget, for episode 150, we're going to be talking about our standout British films. So any suggestions for what you'd pick as standout films made in Britain, just let us know.
But also, might we suggest that people, if possible, try watching Straw Dogs, the Cornetto trilogy, so that's all of the Simon Pegg and thingy stuff.
Nick Frost
stuff.
Yeah.
And Edgar Wright. Which is Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and
The World's End.
Trainspotting, and Never Let Me Go. You'll find out in the episode whose pick is whose.
Never Let Me Go is the most important one to watch.
That one's a bit obvious.
I disagree.
So, This week we're looking at social issues in sci-fi. Who's going to kick off?
Okay, well, shall we do the big elephant in the room? Star Trek.
There's no need for names. Yes.
I didn't mean Star Trek.
That's his full name.
Because Star Trek is obviously the biggest one because it's such a massive difference in terms of kind of a... What is it? Socialist utopia?
Yeah.
As it was described?
Some of the issues that it actually hit on in the 60s was way before its time and really brought some of them to home.
Absolutely. Into the limelight. Isn't that kind of why Kirk actually was there, in essence, to try and kind of, you know, because he was a bit of a womanizer.
He was there.
And a bit of a renegade.
Past the boundaries, wasn't he? Press the boundaries and go where no man has gone before.
Who's kind of there to make Star Trek more palatable as a thing?
He was kind of the all-American male, of course, hero of the time.
Mm.
Yeah.
And trust me, if you look at pretty much anything else of the time, which was like an action-y series that Star Trek was being sold to make it a little bit more palatable, then, he's kind of, sort of womanizing, punchy, wank.
Definitely.
I'm not a huge fan of Kirk. I think he's a good character in the series, but...
Did you like the original captain, then, in the pilot?
Well, yes, I did. In the original pilot, yes.
Yes. I did.
Because, bloody hell, it's a little bit creaky. You watch the original one. The Menagerie.
Yes.
And, yeah, it's a little bit creaky, but bloody hell, in comparison with pretty much everything else at the time, it was amazingly progressive. You had Nigel Barrett as number one. Does that sound familiar?
Yes.
You had a very thinky man who would prefer to figure things out and negotiate as Captain Pike.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
Kung Fu chop his way through it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, what was Gene Roddenberry describing it to when he was trying to sell it to the networks? So something like Wagon Train to the Stars.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a western set in space, wasn't it?
Yeah. Basically. Well, well before Firefly.
Yes.
Very different to Firefly.
Oh yeah, just a little.
But I mean, obviously, then. Kind of progressed on was like Next Generation and DS9 and Voyager and the kind of messages in the episodes were quite interesting.
Yeah, definitely. They always had a social impact, didn't they? I mean, even in the 60s, some of the episodes had something, you know, had to address a social issue as such. I mean, in the 60s, it had the first interracial kiss between Uhura and Kirk.
Which, albeit, was forced because it was an alien who was controlling Kirk.
Absolutely.
And Uhura.
Still kicked up a lot of controversy, though, didn't it?
It still kicked up a lot of controversy. And, of course...
very brave move.
Yeah. The whole thing, you know, remember, Spock looks like the devil.
What?
That was the whole thing. Sorry, he had pointed ears.
Spock looked like the devil.
Yes. That was one of the complaints that the network had about Spock. The network wanted Spock gone. Because no
where
one would like a character.
Where did you get your
like
copies of Star Trek from?
I drew a pentangle and I just got the tapes as they were.
I
they
never
were handed
ever thought
to me by
Spock
this,
as a
this
devil.
Crowley fellow.
I never ever thought of Spock.
Wait, have you only got 10 years left? You said Crowley.
I may have done other deals.
Yeah, anyway, for a start, you know, it's kind of a weird thing about like a joint venture between like loads of different species and loads of different planets. That was kind of you know, kind of revolutionary. Even now, in a way, it's we've had like multiculturalism and whatnot. But
look at the amount of people who really hate the UN.
Yeah,
nowadays.
Yep.
And here you have something which is basically a united Earth. I think they, you know, they actually call it a united Earth a few times.
Federation.
Well, the early series of, you know, Star Trek, I think it's something like the first, you know, the first season, they don't reference Starfleet. I think they call it like Space Fleet or something like that.
All right.
And I don't think they reference the Federation either. So those things just sort of got built up as, you know, different writers were getting a hold of it and coming up with terms. And then, of course, you know, it solidifies as it goes. But yeah, you had the, you know, well, I've already said, you know, Spock looked like the devil, which was, you know, one of the big complaints. And then is the fact that he's half human. And this is at a time when, of course, the whole idea of, you know, someone who's black and someone who's white marrying or even having a relationship or being seen together was just, you know, was just
hush.
Yeah, it just wasn't going to happen. And
happened behind closed doors, without anybody known.
So yeah, stuff like the interracial kiss, having Uhura, albeit even as on, you know, basically the receptionist, which is, you know, what her role was in the original you know, series, but she was on the bridge, and she had a rank of lieutenant. Those were both big things at the time. And yeah,
definitely.
And also, if you just watch the series in general, there's a hell of a lot of non-white faces.
Yeah.
And they'll just, you know, yes, because it's Star Trek, if they're wearing red, they'll probably die. But...
And you had Chekhov, Russian, working with the Americans.
Oh, Jesus, the idea of having a Russian on the bridge.
Ooh.
dodgy. I was thinking, because obviously with the original series, and to a certain extent with the next gen, you had like the Klingons or the Romulans as the big bad guys type thing, almost like, you know, kind of a mirror version of it, so that it's kind of simulating like America versus like the East or whatever.
Yeah, so you've still got the big bad Soviets.
But with
these lot are a little bit brown and they have beards. Yeah. Oh, hang on.
But I mean, with like DS9 especially, you know, the groups kind of generally tend to kind of work together more. In a way, it was kind of a kind of you know, kind of almost not necessarily ending racism, but actually kind of trying to actively work with people that were previously your enemy.
Yeah, and
yeah, they were trying to embrace the positives of the enemy and. You know, respect their cultures more, weren't they?
Absolutely, and
that was evident in Next Generation when when Picard helped Worf with Gowron.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And I think to a certain extent, possibly the Borg could be representative of kind of a colonial force, kind of trying to take what's kind of there and kind of mold it to suit
to their liking.
You know, yeah. So yeah, that's kind of a interesting interpretation.
And of course, let's say you had the Cardassians, who would be the, you know, militaristic dictatorship. Who would just see things as, you know, they could just go around, you know, rapaciously using resources as they saw fit, and then, you know, throwing it away in the case of, you know, Bajor at the start of DS9.
Oh, yeah.
When, it, you know, right, you know, we've got what we want, we'll go.
It's not just that, but also to do with the fact that as the series progresses, you kind of come to realize that the Cardassians actually thought of themselves as superior.
In a way, it's
kind of mirroring kind of how like the Europeans colonized America, and, you know, kind of started to, you know, kind of assume that they should be in control simply because of their values and, you know, how they do stuff.
Yeah, you'd have to be blind not to watch, you know, series of Star Trek, even when it comes back, you know, back to the original, and not cotton on to these things, these themes that, you know, they've got. Where as with DS9, when it comes to, you've got the Jem'Hadar, and they are, you know, they are bred to be soldiers. They are engineered, and so are the. Oh, and now I can't remember what the what Wayoon's species.
Oh, the Vorta.
The Vorta, yes. You know, again, they're basically, you know, they're created by the changelings to be the administrators. You know, the brains of the outfit, and, you know, the Jem'Hadar or the Brawn. They're puppets. They basically have no free will of their own. And when it comes to the Vorta, they don't, they basically don't want the free will, because so far as they're concerned, the changelings are gods. And the Jem'Hadar are almost the same, but they're controlled by drugs. And oh, how many bloody issues are there that it's addressing?
Absolutely.
I mean, bloody hell. I mean, you know, an entire species being kept basically under the thumb and dependent on drugs.
Well, I mean, it's not just that, but I mean, even like issues of kind of sleeper agents as well. Like, you know, it was kind of suspected at one point that Bashir was kind of working for, like, the Dominion and whatnot.
There's that secret police force as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, was it Section...
The Order, Section 9 or something, wasn't it?
And, you know, even the fact that the changelings themselves can kind of, you know, change shape and, you know... It says something about, you know, kind of a pervasiveness of kind of fear about, you know, even, like, the people around us.
And let's see, Star Trek Enterprise, if anyone can be asked to remembering, you know, most of that.
Oh, yeah, that was good. Scott Bakula, yeah.
Well, it had its moments.
It's had its moments. It certainly got stronger in season three, the final season.
Better than Voyager, that's not hard.
No, it wasn't.
I respectfully think you're wrong.
I respectfully decline your comment.
moving on, because obviously we touched a little with, like, the different races and, you know, whatnot, trying to interact on DS9.
I was just going to say one of the plot points that they had in, I think, was it season two onwards with Enterprise, was the terrorist attack on Earth.
Yes. That was in the final episode, wasn't it? Season three, wasn't it? When it all came to a head on the moon.
I'm not entirely sure, but yeah, well...
They were trying to make sure that they were all purebred human and getting rid of the Vulcans.
I think. But yeah, Earth went massively xenophobic and wanted revenge.
Purity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically. And it's like, oh, well, blimey, I don't know what on earth they could be referring to there.
I haven't seen much of Enterprise, but from what I was told from my dad, the Mirror Universe starts out where when the Vulcans actually come to Earth, instead of greeting them with open arms, Zefram Cochrane shoots them.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's worth... So, well, I said a few, you know, a good few episodes back of, you know, Nerds Ago, that I just tracked down all the Mirror Universe episodes and watched them in order. And I have to say that the Enterprise Mirror Universe, two-parter, I think it is, works quite well as a standalone.
Yes.
Because it is completely Mirror Universe. There's no crossover, you know, from, you know, the normal Star Trek universe to the Mirror Universe. It just starts off with that, as you say, you know, with the you know, landing of the Vulcan ship and there's Zephyr and Cochrane, and instead of, you know, shaking hands or, you know, putting its hand out, and the, you know, the Vulcan doing the you know, the three finger salute of logic, he shoots him, and, you know, they storm the ship. And then, of course, it goes on to, instead of all the... Oh, Jesus Christ, that theme tune. Oh, God. it's just one of the worst theme tunes of any series ever. But instead of all the imagery of, you know, these are all the lovely things and the progression and the brave test pilots, and then it goes on to the first moon flight, and then, you know, the first warp ship and colonies, you know, all the things like that, which are, you know, the imagery in the Enterprise intro, they're all replaced by the growth of the Terran Empire.
Yeah.
And it's ace.
Scary. Very
scary. And I'll just say, all hail the Emperor.
See, there's just no need for that, was there? No need. No need at all.
Okay, moving on to another one of my personal favourites, Babylon 5.
Yes. What does that cover? I can't think of any issues that covers.
Oh, man, the amount of different wars involved, you know, shadows. It's quite stark. Not shadows, but I mean the Civil War with Earth.
Civil War with Earth as well, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't imagine who the Centauri are modelled on. I just can't see it.
My hair, isn't it?
You know,
gives it away.
Sitting, yeah. Well, it's my hair in a breeze if I have my hair down.
But, yeah, it's just the brilliance of Babylon 5 is not in the sci-fi, in a way. Because, I mean, obviously they've got, you know, kind of sci-fi, you know, with flying ships and, you know, kind of gates that will send you light years away and whatnot.
Yeah.
But it's to do with kind of the limitations, like with the Earth kind of destroyers and whatnot. You could actually see them physically rotating in order to generate gravity.
I love the fact that the Earth fleet had that. You know, they had practical solution to gravity, whereas, you know, most of the other alien races...
They found their own stuff.
Yeah, they've found anti-gravity, and they don't need that. But, you know, it made the Earth ships look more fearsome.
Yeah,
because you had these massive guns in the ports, at, you know, at the front.
Yeah,
and then you had the, you know, these big, you know, sections that were rotating in the middle, and then, you know, the rear engines. So I just liked the look of them. They looked powerful and physical.
Absolutely,
and definitely not as spaceshipy.
I always preferred Babylon 5 to Deep Space Nine, to be fair, because of the strength of the scripts and how they address certain issues.
Presented them. In a way, I think because Babylon 5 could almost be like the start of the Federation, almost, because, you know, it's one station that its sole purpose is to try and make sure that, you know, no more wars break out between people by, you know, having a place of cooperation, of understanding. And that's something that we don't actually have on Earth at the moment, is it, really? You know, it's just kind of a place where, you know, kind of everybody's welcome. It doesn't belong technically to, you know, anybody, really. And, you know, it's... What do you think? So it sounds like I'm talking at my ass on that one.
No.
Thinking.
We used to have the League of Nations. That worked out well.
Yeah.
That was before the Second World War.
And Babylon 5 has got, like, the, what is it, League of Non-Aligned World?
Yes.
And then they kind of build on that with kind of the Rangers and whatnot.
Yeah.
You even had the, like, Chrysalis with the Delenn and whatnot, you know, actual species kind of in... not just interacting, but, you know, kind of being kind of crossed.
There were so many sci-fi things I liked in Babylon 5. And just, yeah, the whole politics. Well, one of the things that blew my mind about Babylon 5 was that I was in, I joined a Facebook group for Babylon 5. And you've got a series where there's a major plot arc of the Earth being taken over by, you know, totalitarianism.
Yes.
Yep.
And fascism.
Absolutely, and it's slowly coming in. You can see it like in the Night Watch.
You've got the Night Watch where it's like, oh, we're just looking after Earth. It's all nice and friendly, but report anyone who's, you know, being seditious or, you know, being a little bit anti-Earth, and they'll... And
then it goes on to basically just, like, anybody who's acting suspiciously.
Yeah.
Thing and stuff.
Yeah. But, you know, I was in this Babylon 5 group, and it was run by a Tea Partier.
Did they disagree with your interpretation of stuff?
They had fucking weird interpretations of stuff. And it was basically talking to Bizarro.
Mm.
Everything was, you know, up is down, black is white. And, you know, the things like, you know, the fascist Earth government was actually the liberals.
Hmm. What?
And you know where they do, you know, was it like, you know, the Freedom Channel from, you know, Babylon 5.
Oh, yes,
and they,
yes.
You know, to break the embargo. Mm. That was Fox News.
Fox News? No way.
Yeah, because they were the only ones who were prepared to tell the truth and what was really happening with America.
Oh, dear.
Uh-huh. It's like, you are so far either down the rabbit hole or up your own arse. I don't know which it is. So I just left, and it's like, I am amazed that people who are talking, you know, about, you know, these plots of, you know, something that they've got in box sets can miss the point so spectacularly.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's an example of, you would think that people would actually cotton on, but I think it's just, if they're so far of the other way of thinking, they will just manage to twist everything around for their weird worldview. But yeah, the idea that Fox News was the Babylon 5, you know, free news and such was just, oh, fuck's sake. Fuck's sake.
Crazy.
It was mad, but...
I thought it was... do you remember that episode where, on that kind of Freedom Channel, where Ivanova was told to announce that, oh, nothing happened in sector such and such?
Oh, yeah.
That was brilliant, that was.
Yeah, and said, absolutely nothing happened in Sector 7G or whatever it was.
That's The Simpsons.
Yeah. But I couldn't remember. Well, I was either going to say, you know, either, you know, Sector G or Sector ZZ9 plural Z Alpha for any of the, you know, Hitchhiker's nerds out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even like the Doctor, Stephen, I think in the TV film in the beginning, you know, it's kind of, he said that, you know, in the end, the sides don't matter. He heals people.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's kind of pretty much not only looked down upon for that, but also wasn't he court-martialed or something? For, you know, kind of trying to patch up like an enemy combatant.
Like Minbari.
Mm.
Yes, I believe he was. Always going to.
That's, yeah, it's, there's just certain little bits like that where it's like ideology kind of creeps in and it's like, you know.
Yeah. And it also further darker tone to it than Deep Space Nine. Mm. It had that little bit of an edge to it where these things were happening and there was a bit more, it was a bit more sinister when they did happen.
Absolutely.
A bit more, they felt a bit more realistic sometimes to me anyway.
I thought Babylon 5 would have been better. Well, first of all, more or less every series is going to be better if it has a bigger budget.
Mm.
But also, if it hadn't almost been killed at the end of season 4.
Yeah.
Because it had amazing pacing issues.
Mm.
You've got you know, the entire first season where, you know,
just
things... Yeah, it's basically just to...
get you accustomed to their traditions and yeah.
Yeah, you know, if you're wanting to catch up on it, you can almost skip the entire season. You know, entire first season. But then you've got seasons 2 and 3, which are, you know, pretty much great, but then you've got 4, which is everything is just massively accelerated because they thought they were gonna get cancelled.
Mm.
And then you've got season 5, which is you know, a lot of the stuff that they couldn't do in season 4 because they simply didn't have enough time. And so, you know, it's like, ooh, it's paced, it's getting pacey, and then everything's sped up And then it slows right down for season 5, and you just go,
So, moving on from Babylon 5, what did we make of Black Mirror?
Black Mirror was... Each episode has had its own kind of individual thing, so...
Story, basically, didn't it? And it had its own moral.
Absolutely.
At the end of it.
It's had some of my favourite sci-fi.
Yeah.
In years in that series. So, yeah. I'm very happy with it existing.
So, definitely. Yeah, like, when they have the hard drives in their head and they kind of can keep on replaying stuff.
It basically that was creepy.
Just living the
entire history of you, I think that one was. Because that has been bought.
That concept.
Was it optioned?
All right.
Really?
Yeah.
For a movie.
So we'll see what happens.
It is.
Who's got it?
I can't remember now. When I heard about it, it was about a year ago.
I mean, obviously, it's kind of got parallels with like the internet and, you know, kind of people's ability to basically just kind of keep on reliving the past over and over and over again, trying to look for, you know, any tiny snippet, you know, that will kind of indicate one way or another about something.
Also in crystal clarity, which is the dangerous part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because if they miss something, they can just go back and check it. And there it is.
Nothing is sacred anymore.
And nothing is lived in the now either. Everything's kind of done for, you know, the recording.
Yeah. Everything's done out of necessity rather than for fun to some degrees, which is scary.
And then, of course, there's the episode where a woman basically buys a kind of, what is it, a bot?
Yeah, Android, or, wasn't it?
Yeah, Android.
And she just lost her husband, didn't she? Yeah, that was freaky.
All of them are freaky, to be fair.
That was one of my favourites, because once again, it deals with AI.
Mm.
Yeah.
And what consciousness is. I really liked, was it the comment that, you just put pictures and, you know, photos up in the attic and take them out every now and again to look at.
Mm.
And that's how that episode ends.
Yeah.
That's what I like about Black Mirror. It makes you think. Every episode really makes you think and really tends to, in some ways, shock you to the core more than other sci-fis on telly. It's a lot more deeper, I think.
It is very vivid. Another one that I remember quite well is the one where the guy is, I think, meets somebody who then goes on to become like this kind of porn star. And in order to try and kind of get her back, he has to kind of go on this kind of almost like Britain's Got Talent type kind of show.
That's a whole dystopian future in itself, because they're just... You know, cogs in the machine, and there's just thousands of channels.
Absolutely, but then his act of rebellion becomes like a gimmick that
because he breaks in, doesn't he, and holds a shard of glass to his throat.
Yeah,
and then rants at them, and they go, "Oh, that's brilliant! That's a good act." And he ends up getting a channel or a show of his own where he has to do that.
Absolutely, I mean,
everyone's in their own personal self-made hell.
Yeah, and I absolutely hated the way overweight people were treated on that. So you know you're overweight, therefore you can't produce as much energy and get as many credits and whatnot. So therefore you get stuck on like reality TV show and basically humiliated for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I've not heard of that happening anywhere. I'm glad they don't humiliate people who might not be the brightest on national TV just to get a laugh out of them.
That was just... Oh. Yeah.
Wait, shit.
But, yeah, that entire episode was, incredibly telling.
Oh, and...
it was.
The Waldo moment.
Waldo?
Waldo moment.
Yeah, the really annoying animated bear avatar that ends up...
Oh, yeah. That was freaky.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, oh, well, at least you'd never get a completely unsuitable, buffoonish, arsehole clown character.
You know what's really bad about it is the fact that, you know, part of the reason why it can be so easily manipulated is because it is like a, you know, kind of a logo or an image or whatnot, and it can be used by absolutely everybody, which obviously happens when it kind of, what does it get bought by China or something like that?
I can't remember, but it ends up in a dystopian, like, fascist future, doesn't it?
Absolutely. But I mean, I've
ran by Waldo.
Yeah, I've heard on the internet about you know, the race, presidential. Well, obviously, it hasn't kind of completely begun yet. But Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump versus a candidate called D's Nuts.
Yes,
and it's like, can you not see a problem with having basically a non-person running for in politics?
The problem is that D's Nuts are polling 9%.
Mm.
If you notice, I used a plural there.
It is very scary.
Because D's Nuts are plural.
In a way, it's kind of one of the reasons why superheroes may not necessarily work. You know, it's because anybody can take a symbol and, you know, use it however they like.
My issue is, if I was Superman and if I happened upon the Earth and saw Donald fucking Trump and Nigel twatting Farage, I'd just level the ball. Go on, great apes. You've got another shot. Because these ones are... Yeah, it's... Oh, dear.
I'm glad that you're not Kryptonian.
No. I hate green, though. Because I can...
I agree.
Do you don't like spinach then?
Does make me wonder whether
it was a problem owning an Xbox with all those games.
It does make me wonder whether, like, you know, Superman kind of stood next to Green Lantern and was like, "Can you just not do that?
Can you turn it down?
Yeah. Turn what down?
Not be quite so green." And I go, "Oh, you're space racist," and then that would be a whole film.
Anyway, I mean, when it comes to kind of individual episodes of a series, kind of doing all sorts of different moral kind of and whatnot messages, I think Sliders is also a good one to look at, because the amount of different places that you know, kind of parallel
universe
that, and it does seem to get like somewhat heavy-handed at times with how it kind of goes about stuff. Like, say, for example, when it comes to...
To be fair, that's not exclusive to Sliders. Hell of a lot. I mean, what about that anti-racism episode of the original Star Trek where you have two people and one of them's half black and the other white, and the other is half white and half black, and it's just the sides that are, you know, black or white are transposed.
You see, that just reminds me of the Twix advert now. One's half black, half white. Well, the other is half white, half black. And they share a driveway.
I don't know where you buy your Twixes from.
I think it's time for a break.
I would check
time for a Kit Kat.
But no, Sliders is a good one for that, because I remember an episode. Well, there's obviously been plenty of episodes, but one of the episodes which was kind of dealing with sexism and how it's so difficult to see. You know, kind of the privilege of, you know, being male versus, you know, being female and whatnot, when they slide into a world where it is completely, you know, the opposite. So, you know, women do have, you know, the kind of power, they run for office, they can do whatever they want. Dads are, you know, kind of stay at home, you know, kind of looking after kids and whatnot. And Professor Arturo actually runs as the first kind of, you know, local politician, like mayor or whatever, that is actually male. And kind of almost starts kind of a, you know, revolution for men on that world.
Well, what was he wearing? How was he going to balance the work and looking after his children?
See, that's the thing. It was made point of that his emotions were, you know, contrary to, you know, his job. You know, they kind of brought in all sorts of, you know, pseudo biological factors for why, oh, he'll be a terrible person to, you know, run the place and whatnot.
Yeah.
All that testosterone will just, you know, get in the way and make sure that he never makes any good decisions. Exactly. Everything will be emotional.
And also there was
that was a really good episode, though, to be fair.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I can't really remember it. So
Hold your head in shame.
Yeah, I'm clearly.
You've got homework this week, Retroid. Your homework is to watch every single episode of Sliders. Forget Supernatural for a week and just concentrate on Sliders.
Let's just say in a parallel universe, there's a me that's done that.
Fair enough.
Excellent.
Is Sliders on Netflix or anything?
I think it used to be, but not anymore.
It used to be, but not anymore, yeah.
Knackers.
It's on the Sci-Fi channel, though, isn't it? Normally is, anyway.
Yeah, but that inspires me watching the Sci-Fi channel. Mm.
But there's all sorts of kind of parallels, like, if penicillin hadn't have been invented, and there was massive kind of quarantines and whatnot about like this outbreak of, you know, basically, you know, something that would be very, very easy to kill.
I remember that.
Yeah.
When that is that the one where they had to wear those big, ugly orange yellow suits?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Patient Zero was the alternate version of Quinn from that world.
Yes.
And was it? Yeah, they capture the other Quinn instead, and then wonder because why he's not infected.
Whereas the other ones are walking around going, sneeze.
But I mean, yeah, there's all sorts of different weird and wonderful kind of worlds in Sliders that, you know, very much a kind of,
They managed to get quite imaginative as well. As the seasons progressed and you thought they couldn't actually throw any more at it, they managed to up the ante a little bit, which I liked.
Hmm.
I'll have to rewatch it because it was absolutely bloody. I was watching it when it was.
Told you, you've got bloody Omer.
I think there was an episode in season four where I think what was it? I think it was where Hitler hadn't have come to power and whatnot. There was no kind of declaration of human rights or anything like that. They basically enslaved people. Like, you know, kind of physically and stuff. So not just, you know, kind of having them work for you, but actually kind of brainwashing, turning them into, kind of complete slaves on a biological level. It's like nobody seemed to kind of bat an eye about it. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Well, people don't at the time, do they?
Mm. No.
Did anyone watch that series on the BBC, which was about the hidden cost of Britain's slavery past?
No.
You should chase it down on iPlayer. It's rather good. It's several parts. It's this researcher who goes into the amount of the British Empire, which was built on slavery, and the way there was a massive bailout, and the fact that people at the time were saying, anyone who's campaigning against it, they're just busybodies, and, you know, black people like being slaves. It's their natural order. And all these other bits of really nasty, foul bullshit.
Yeah.
In any way to justify it, because it's the way things are. Why would you change it? It would be so much trouble.
It does actually remind me slightly of, I think it was a sexual education program that I watched recently, about, I think it was...
Was this on RedTube?
No. A woman from, I think it was like the Netherlands or something, came in and, you know, basically took a kind of a small group of pupils and kind of taught them like her way of, you know, kind of sex education.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they found that sex education is obviously so poor in this country.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of she had kind of quite radical, ideals and whatnot about, you know, kind of teaching, kids about, you know, kind of where the clitoris is and whatnot, and basically getting really into the nitty-gritty, including stuff like PSE type stuff, like, you know, what are blowjobs, you know, and all sorts of kind of things about consent and whatnot. And it was actually quite scary when she first got the kids into the room, because the boys were dominant, because they were so outspoken and whatnot, and they were like, "Oh yeah, when you're having sex, you know, you want to kind of pull it out and kind of come in her face and stuff like that." It's like, what?
Joy.
And obviously, these are kids that have basically learnt what they know about sex from pornography.
Yeah,
and a lot of American porn is just not. Very...
When the woman actually got the kids into pairs, so male and female pairs. You know, and they also had like, oh, the guy is obviously kind of bringing forth his kind of version of, oh yeah, yeah, and come on her tits, and you know, all this kind of male, you know,
male centric
things. And you know, these were meant to be kind of consensus between, you know, you know, young boy and the young girl, as to, you know, kind of what kind of sex would be kind of erotic and, you know, nice and whatnot. And you know, the guys had to actually start to be taught about the concept of consent. And you know,
that's the terrifying thing.
Absolutely, it's this concept, man, that before that point, those guys, they would have went out into the world, had this completely unrealistic version of sex, where they thought that, you know, oh, if you have sex with a girl, obviously you're going to have to, you know, kind of come on her breasts or come on her face.
There are all these things that you have to do because it's the done thing. Because
exactly. And so there's no kind of sense of, oh, well, I've got to give the girl pleasure because, you know, that's fair, you know, and whatnot. Or there's no concept of, oh, she's up for sex, therefore I can pretty much do what I want. Oh, that's and just... there was also complete double standards when it came to shaving, because the boys thought that the girls should shave her pubic hair, and would even go as far as to kind of refuse sex from them or leave them if they're in a relationship with a girl that had pubic hair.
That's...
I know. And, so the teacher actually got them to shave, you know, whenever there was hair down there, got them to shave the pubic hair all off, the guys... and they start to found that it was actually really, really itchy and really uncomfortable, and you know, sort of like they had to do it, you know, quite often as well. And you know, by the end of it, they had a completely new understanding of, you know, what sex is all about, what consent is all about, and you know, everything like that. It was quite an amazing documentary, really.
So going back to sci-fi. Any films?
Maybe that was sex education with robots. There we go. We're back to sci-fi.
There we go. Absolutely. Any films that take you that you'd like to that think fit into this mold quite well? Retroid?
I think.
Oh,
yeah, Retroid.
I don't know. Well, I was just walking out earlier next to the Tannhauser Gate, watching, you know, sea beams, you know, glittering. You know, all these things. And I thought, you know, all these moments will be lost. Like tears and rain. Of course, Blade Runner, which is the best film ever made.
Blade Runner is an amazing, epic masterpiece.
We won't go into too far because, you know, obviously...
No, because we've already discussed it Which episode is it, Paul?
Was it one? No, it wasn't 138. Probably 134 or something.
Round about then.
Yeah, round about then. So, right. If you want to listen to it, listen from episode 134 to 138. Bonus.
Blade Runner covers. It covers what an actual. You know, it covers sentience. What an actual individual is, what rights they have, whether you need memories to be counted as a person, or whether you can just be created, you know, just completely on the off, whether it's right to enslave something which, you know, you think isn't quite human.
Right to enslave something that you've created.
Yes. And this would be, this factors in with what you've been saying as well, because, of course, one was a worker, another was a soldier, and Chris was a... Yes, she was. She was, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was. Yeah, she was a sex worker, don't she? Yeah.
So it's basically any kind of enslavement and subjugation. That's what humans are doing to the replicants because they're not human.
Yeah.
And they're kept under control and they're kept off Earth.
But it's the fact that they need Blade Runners to begin with. That's kind of the dodgy part, because it's like, so they've created, in essence, synthetic humans. Humans so realistic that on a biological level, they're, you know, almost indistinguishable from humans. On, you know, a mental level, they're almost indistinguishable from humans.
In fact, in some cases, better.
Even Deckard and Rachel didn't realise that they were replicants.
No. Oh, spoiler!
Sorry.
You just can't get the staff. I'm really sorry, listeners. Oh, no. It's all gone to part. Emily, come back. Where are you?
She sat next to me.
By the way, you know the Planet of the Apes?
Yep.
It's actually Earth. Sorry!
Have any of you watched Humans yet? Channel 4's Humans?
I have not, no.
I've been waiting for it to be over with so I can watch it in one big chunk. And also, then I found out it's based on, I think it's a Scandinavian series.
Yes, I found that out as well.
And it's like, mother, I want to watch that now.
I have to say, as you like Blade Runner, you should love Humans.
Mm.
And that's what I'm going to say on that subject. Humans is really good to watch. It deals with sentient beings and AI.
It looked right up my alley. I really liked the look of it. And it's just, you know, when I was looking it up, because I don't know, I got in my head that it was only going to be about three parts. And then I found out that it was actually, you know, I looked it up on IMDb and it said eight.
Yeah.
It's like, no, there's no way when I've been box setting stuff, you know, for so long, that I am waiting weekly to watch something like that. I just want to watch it in one go and just...
Yeah. But it has finished.
Right.
Last episode was a couple of weeks ago.
Ah, good. In that case, I can actually chase it up on 4OD.
Definitely. Mm. So
I think there's a certain level of kind of similarity between Blade Runner and Battlestar Galactica, actually, when it comes to, you know, kind of the indistinguishable nature of...
That was very smooth. That was very smoothly done.
Thank you.
You're hired.
Yes.
Excellent.
First time I've been hired for something in about 6 years.
Okay, you're fired.
Ah! But,
I should really sound more gruffer. I was going to say more grumpy, but yeah, I'm not sure if I can do that.
So Battlestar Galactica,
yeah,
you were saying, Paul.
So yeah, obviously with what was it, the toasters? Not toasters. That's the racial slur for the Cylons. That's one.
You space racist. Actually, a space past racist.
Mm.
Yeah,
yeah. That's a bit of a spoiler. Ish, not quite, but kind of.
It's
in a weird way.
Yeah.
Moving swiftly now.
But yeah, you know, you obviously have, you know, kind of certain Cylons that obviously look human, and you know they've kind of been replicated again and again and again and again. And there's different versions of them out there, almost a bit like the Vorta in DS9.
Yeah,
and.
Except they are their own masters.
Yeah, and obviously there's the was it the final five Cylons, which didn't actually realise that they were Cylons in the first place.
Hmm.
Until a certain point.
Yeah, the sleepers.
Hmm.
And, which, yeah, they didn't know which, you know, well, they didn't know every single one up until they wrote it, apparently, which you can kind of tell.
Hmm. But what I found interesting is that the final five were actually five of the most aggressive towards Cylons as well.
Yeah.
Mm.
Which is kind of interesting.
I don't know. I thought Saul was a cuddly teddy bear.
But, yeah, and obviously you have, like, all
spoilers,
sorts of...
Spoilers, sorry.
There's all sorts of kind of personalities involved in Battlestar Galactica as well, like... Gaius, who's pretty much like a sex addict who's kind of almost like addicted to the enemy, as it were.
Yeah.
And power.
Yeah, and power.
Yeah.
And survival, really. Mm. I think survival is one of his strongest.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's also quite charming, which I don't think was from the original. I think they've, you know, kind of made him fairly, you know, charming-ish.
Have you watched the original?
I've watched bits and dabs.
You're talking about the one with
the 80s
face
Dirk
Benedict,
Starbuck.
Yeah,
was that the one that he was. I didn't like his comments about like Katie Sackhoff's you know, Starbuck, and you know how they made her into a woman.
I could kind of understand where it was coming from, because it would be so. Because it just taking something which was done in the late 70s and actually injecting a little bit of variety.
Yeah.
Mm.
And for a start, in the original one, Saul was black.
Yes.
So they actually sort of flipped that, but I think they just did it as, almost random. Because in a lot of ways, it didn't actually matter. I ended up thinking that Katie Sackhoff as Starbuck was brilliant.
Yes, definitely.
Whereas Dirk Benedict Starbuck, granted he didn't have much to play with. He was, fairly two-dimensional.
Hmm.
But I thought, she was pretty damn awesome. But yeah, in the original Battlestar Galactica, Baltar was just the collaborator who ended up siding with the Cylons, who were aliens in the original series.
Yes.
So, weird purple aliens with purple space afros that you didn't see much because, of course, it was the late 70s and they had bugger all to make them with. Exactly. But I think I had a toy of one of them, actually. I think I might still have it. An original. Yeah, well, I have an original 1970s Cylon ship.
Wow. Yeah.
I also have a
presumably it's not life size.
Sadly no. Otherwise, it would have been on the news because I would have been doing strafing runs.
You bastard!
I've got a few 80s toys. It's like I've got an actual Zark figure.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And I've got him sitting in a Tron light cycle.
Wow.
I'll have to post up a photo. Let's just say he doesn't have quite the same amount of markings as Zark did in the original Tron.
Hmm.
But that's I absolutely loved Battlestar Galactica when I was little.
I used to watch it all the time when I was little, to be fair.
Saturday mornings.
So shall we try and nail down some of the common themes with sci-fi?
Well, instead of us just sitting there going,
I remember that.
It was good, wasn't it? Yeah.
So obviously you have concepts.
Apart from if you sat down and watched most of it now, it would be shit.
Mm.
I'll readily put my hands up to that because I have watched one or two episodes and it's just, this is a bit bad.
Mm.
I can still watch it.
If you watch it as an incredibly cheesy 70s sci-fi, then, yeah. If you want it to expand the universe of the rebooted Battlestar Galactica, don't.
Oh, no.
Don't. No. Just don't do that. The Vipers are still awesome, though, which is why they still use them in the, in the reboot series. The original one didn't really have anything apart from aliens with robot army, bad, don't like humans, blow up.
Pretty much, it was all about the action, wasn't it, the original one?
Yeah, humans run away from bad aliens and stuff and find the occasional colony and on their way to find Earth. And the less said about Galactica 80, the better.
Yeah, we'll skip over that. Going back to Paul's point, though.
Yep.
If we wrap up with the common themes.
I mean, obviously there's kind of space racism.
Yes.
So don't be space racist.
I was going to say that's my favourite kind of space, of racism, but really that's not what I meant to say.
I mean, with certain ones as
if
well.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't have a favourite racism. So, oh God, just keep thinking that. Oh.
But obviously with things like Blade Runner and Battlestar Galactica and whatnot, there's facsimiles of humanity.
Yeah.
And whether
sentient
we should give them rights, the same rights that we have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've got interracial relationships or interspaceship racial relationships, however you want to say it.
I have to say, the one thing that I actually, looking down the list, there appears to be mostly an absence of gay characters a lot of the time.
Sadly,
yes. Apart from Enterprise.
Enterprise had a gay character.
Yeah, Trip. Was it Trip?
Trip was with T'Pol, wasn't it?
No, yes. Not Trip. The security officer.
Yes, I vaguely remember that.
Yes. It's the chief of security.
All right. No, that wasn't Malcolm, was it?
Yeah.
Malcolm was gay.
Yeah.
I did not know that. That's kind of cool. I need to get into Enterprise.
And they had the, typically heavy-handed because it was Star Trek and they had to do everything in the one episode. But Star Trek The Next Generation, which was it Outcast? I think that episode.
Right.
Where there was a species of androgynous alien and they reproduced. Yeah. I can't remember whether it was asexually. Or, they basically just, coupled in a non-gender way and reproduced that way. But sometimes some of them would develop a preference.
Yes.
So, it's like they almost had the beginning of a gender identity.
But admittedly, Mass Effect is, I think, generally okay. I mean, it wasn't fantastic for actual... allowing you to have like a gay relationship in the first two games, if you're a guy.
Well, but, had the blue space lady.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you had like the Asari, which is a monogender species. So and they obviously have this kind of thing where they mostly mate with other species, and if they do mate with their own species, it's almost kind of deemed as almost like inbreeding.
Yeah, it's frowned upon because you're not bringing any new traits.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it's quite interesting that was.
I quite liked the daughter of the Krogan. She runs a bar in Mass Effect 2. And you talk to her a few times. Not was it Varia? Whatever the name of the. The sort of mafia boss was, she just happens to be running a bar, and you talk to her a few times, just the bar section, not a bar and nightclub, etc.
But you
talk to her, and she's all gruff, and she basically just complains about things, and has a very cynical. Not quite, but very cynical view of the universe and other species, and she mentions that probably got it from her father.
But yeah, I mean, and obviously things like Star Trek and whatnot, you also have like a lack of money as well.
Yeah,
which does remind me of a similar type thing in an episode of Sliders, where basically if you get out money from a cash machine. In order to buy stuff, obviously, the more money you get out, the more chance of winning the lottery you have. But the lottery is for kind of a nice death.
Yep.
So it's kind of a form of population control. Obviously, there's kind of a lack of money in some of those as well.
I'd have that, but with like X Factor voting. Just idly wasn't pondering there.
Yeah. But obviously, with Babylon 5, you just did still have like the credits system and whatnot.
Yeah.
And you have to have some kind of way of
paying for things that with species or worlds that still have a currency.
Mm.
Because otherwise, you're not going to turn up in your fancy Federation ship and just say, "Lol, we don't do money." Cheerio. Do you fancy some of our non-processed sewage?
Mm.
Because if we can give you a replicator and you can turn it into food, thumbs up.
That's always kind of, presumably with replicators in Star Trek, you wouldn't be able to produce latinum with them?
That's the idea behind gold-pressed latinum. The Ferengi have found, because it's mentioned a few times that, replicators, they can replicate most things properly.
Mm.
But there are some things which are too complicated and they can't quite do.
Like dilithium crystals as well.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not like a get out, a bit like the holodeck is. the replicators have limits, they have limitations, and they can't replicate certain things, and the entire idea behind Gold Press Latinum is that no one can replicate it.
Although, by the same token, surely if you're able to rip apart a body, you know, a life form, and rearrange its atoms at another completely different space, how difficult would it be to do Latinum? I don't quite believe the technical limitations.
There are. You're talking to someone who's got the Star Trek Next Generation technical manual.
Oh, go for it.
And it's the whole process of a they're similar, but a transporter doesn't recreate, it simply converts.
Okay.
So it will translate matter into energy. And then it will, you know, transmit it, and then when that energy gets there, it will reconvert it back into matter. And that gets around the entire problem of what happens every time, you know, because it's the whole question of how does a transporter work? Would it be ethical to use a transporter? Because surely every time you transport, you're killing someone.
Well, surely it can't
that,
be...
You know, that life, that consciousness ends, and then you know, the only way out of it, you know, and say, oh, it's all fine, is that the person who materializes at the other end doesn't know that because they are a copy and perfect copy.
Just one problem, though. It doesn't just do straightforward conversion, because there have been accidents where, say, for example, Picard and I think Ensign Roe and Guinan actually returned to the ship from a transporter malfunction and they were younger.
Yeah, that's because it's bollocks.
And on that note, thank you very much, Retroid.
How can we possibly, you know, come up with a thing and, you know, let's do this? How about, because it's just, MacGuffins. Let's have, ooh, the safety protocols go wrong on the holodeck. Oh, no, not again. Let's have a transporter accident. Oh, Christ, not again.
I think this is fast becoming like a, you know, Nerds Assemble Star Trek.
Absolutely. So... I'm going to have to step in and take control before.
Assuming
just for the record,
control?
Though, while you were arguing about transporters and stuff, I have to apologise. Apparently, Malcolm was not gay in Star Trek Enterprise. He was rumoured to be, but then they went the other way and confirmed that he was heterosexual.
That's actually a bit disappointing.
It is very disappointing. So, moving swiftly on that bombshell, what have we been up to this week, people?
Emily?
Retroid.
No, okay.
Oh, Emily. Yeah, no, Emily.
Emily first.
Emily.
Hi. I ended up being dragged to the cinema to watch Paper Towns.
Dragged to the cinema? You drove?
Okay, I drove, but it was
reverse dragging?
Did you have a gun pointed to your head? Baseball bat? Knife? Something like that?
It was the lure of a trailer that perhaps made the film out to be a little bit more than what it was.
That and the fact that we like John Green, who was the writer behind the novel of Paper Towns, because he's an awesome YouTube star.
But
okay,
yeah,
I'm not convinced when you say YouTube star.
Well, his YouTube videos are genuinely.
I'm actually not convinced by Emily's reaction to it so far.
He does mental floss. He does Crash Course.
Okay, right.
He's also the guy that wrote the book that The Fault in Our Stars is based on.
Yeah.
Okay.
But now, what exactly is Paper Towns? Because I have not heard this.
An actual paper town is a town that you would find on a map that actually doesn't exist in real life. It was put there by the map maker in order to catch out people copying their maps.
Cool.
However...
Like Carlisle.
However, sometimes paper towns actually become real towns because, you know, kind of people go there.
But that's not really some of the film.
No, not really. But, yeah, it's like a paper town can become real if, like, people kind of go there and start basically being like... Okay, well, this is the town. Start building.
The actual film is basically an anti-romance teen film.
Hmm.
Basically.
That's very true.
It's anti-romance. Okay. It's a coming-of-age story and is anti-romance at the same time in quite an interesting way. I think my viewing of it was perhaps colored by the fact that most of the screening was packed with 12 to maybe 18-year-olds. who, even though...
More like 12 to 16.
Yeah, we didn't have assigned seats. And so they used this opportunity to just keep getting up and walking around during the film.
Oh,
it was
great.
Like...
Now, was it legal to kill them?
The thing is, though, as I was like thinking to myself, well, the little brats during the like screenings for much younger films go and do that. It's like you haven't grown up at all. You can't sit fucking still. That was my opinion on that. Perhaps I'm not very child-friendly at the moment in terms of how I view their activities in public spaces.
Fair enough.
Perhaps I wanted to, you know, kind of kick one of them maliciously at one point when they spilled my popcorn as they went by.
I can understand that.
An accident, but it was kind of a avoidable accident because we were sitting on like a row with just us, and they could have quite easily have gone round the other way to pick a seat.
Instead,
they kind of come past us, despite the fact that we were the only ones on the row. Kicked over Emily's.
But they were scared of me afterwards.
Oh yeah, they were like, "Sorry." And then when they went by, because I think they got went to get up again, so they kind of went around the other way this time.
Good.
Otherwise,
was the film actually good?
I enjoyed it. It didn't, because of the fact that it's essentially an anti-romance film.
Hmm.
It doesn't end as you expect it might.
Fair enough.
I watched some more Supernatural season 7 this past week whilst I've been exercising. I've just seen the episode where there's the kids' pizza place, and all these drawings of scary things the kids imagine are becoming real.
And Sam
gets chased by clowns, which he is absolutely freaking terrified of. And we've known this for a while. That was something that happened in season 1 or 2, that we were introduced to the fact that he does not like clowns at all.
Interesting.
And it's mostly Dean's fault.
Oh, yeah. And last week, during the week, I rewatched the episode where, Bobby dies. It was just, even though I knew it was coming, it was just freaking heartbreaking.
Bastards!
Is that a spoiler alert, by the way?
Well, season 7.
I'm up to season 9. We're watching season 9 at the moment.
Hmm.
And I still have not forgiven them.
Oh, I thought you'd mistyped. Sorry.
What, season 789? Hasn't been going on for quite that long yet.
It feels like it sometimes when you've been watching them in, you know, back-to-back box sets.
That's why I thought you'd mistyped it. I was like, nah, it's not up to that.
I remember when this show was good. It jumped the shark at series 582.
Yeah, it just went rubbish after that.
Kripke's grandson took over.
When they did a deal with on the black hole in Sagittarius A at the center of the galaxy and destroyed the Earth. Oh, that was a bit much.
Well, the new season premieres in America soon, doesn't it? Next month? September?
No, it's not September, it's October.
Considering I don't watch it, I was close.
I love how Emily knows this.
I also know for a fact that unfortunately Misha Collins had an unfortunate incident this weekend. It was the big Creation Con in Minneapolis this weekend, and on Friday night, Misha was coming out of a restaurant, and three guys jumped him and mugged him.
Oh, that's nice.
And he was pushed to the ground, hurt his face, had all his stuff nicked. He went to the convention on Saturday and Sunday, but he only did photo ops and autographs rather than the panels, because obviously he was, you know, feeling a bit worse for wear.
Yeah.
But what was really bad was that somebody actually generated, using some weird website, a fake article saying that he'd been hospitalized and shit that looks really real. And it was he's fine beyond the fact that unfortunately he had to have some stitches and he's got swelling.
The hell? You know? Why?
Because the way the fan community works.
It's because
there's people within the Supernatural fan community who don't like Misha Collins and they don't like Cassiel. No.
Who could not like Misha Collins? He's adorable.
Exactly. And
people are fucking stupid.
Misha's
and incredibly malicious.
That's basically my motto.
Yeah. But Misha's obviously like he's like fine, but obviously like a bit shaken, and his family's obviously not particularly happy about it either.
No, that's fair enough.
But yeah. Mind you, like then like all the guys at the con, as in like Jensen Jared, Richard Spate, and like Junior and like a couple of the stars they had there, were like making like jokes about the whole thing afterwards. Mm. And I assume it's because most women and girls don't understand bloke humour, but they didn't get it was a coping mechanism.
Mm.
Yeah, like it was like it's like somebody like one of the main jokes that went round was like, oh, why didn't the muggers go after Osric Chow, who plays Kevin Tran? And that's because they know they'd all get broken shoulders because Osric Chow's the kid, well, actor that broke Jared's shoulder before season 10 started filming, I think.
It reminds me of I think it was Christmas Eve when I bashed my knuckles in. On the ground accidentally, and it's like the blood pouring from them and whatnot. Yeah. And you know, I was actually using humour as a coping mechanism to kind of try.
Apparently, this isn't something that other women, like women, apparently don't understand. I understood it anyway, but then again, every psychological test I take says I'm a guy, so you know.
Yeah,
and most of the tests I take say that I'm a lady.
Well then,
and I haven't taken any tests. Should I be worried?
No, they're really shit.
It's just, oh Jesus. I just do them because, you know, I thought, oh, this is going to be hilarious. Let's do another one. They go, I'm a woman again, apparently. And it's like, I don't know. Because the one I did most recently, I thought, it's going to ask you what's your favourite, you know, team.
Yeah.
Which Facebook did for fucking ages. And it's just, I don't have a favourite team. And go on, you don't have to be shy. What's your favourite football? I don't have one because I hate sport.
Just tap in Team Edward.
Yeah.
No. Team Free Will, which is the nickname for Dean, Kaz and
all right.
Sam. Mm.
I'll tell you something, I'm Team Bobby. And that's why I'm never forgiving them. Idiots.
Okay. We're never going to get over Bobby, are we?
It's that beard.
Okay. Moving swiftly on.
Yes. Me?
Paul, what have you been doing?
I've been playing Kingdom Hearts 2 quite a bit. I've fancied basically
you legend,
going...
You.
I fancy going on something that was like a RPG, so story-based and whatnot. I remember... So I have played kind of Kingdom Hearts HD Remix, you know, kind of, I think last year or something like that. So I decided to open up my copy of, HD Remix 2.5. So I stuck on Kingdom Hearts 2, started playing through it. Ah, bloody hell, the amount of time that you spend before you get to actually play as Sora. And it's not like I don't like Roxas as a character. It just felt like his entire thing was like a overly long tutorial.
Yep.
And it grated. It really did grate.
That's fair comment.
That's one of my pet hates when you have an RPG and they have a section which is clear. It's not labeled as such, but it's clearly a big tutorial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just please let me just skip this.
I mean, they try and make it.
You know, obviously they kind of stuck in loads of story in there, which was quite good. But I reckon there could have been like, you know, remove all the gameplay from it, just have the cutscene, and then all of a sudden Sora, you play as.
Yeah,
much easier. On the whole, I am quite enjoying it. I think Kingdom Hearts 2 is better than the first. It seems to have kind of this better ratio of kind of reward to effort. Than the original did, you know. So you're getting stuff faster and kind of leveling up more, and you know, kind of getting different abilities faster as well. Like it almost seems like every other battle, there is, you know, oh yes, I've got Sora a new ability or whatnot. It may be just a tiny ability that, you know, adjusts him ever so slightly, but it feels more rewarding doing that.
Yeah, it feels more worthwhile doing.
Absolutely. And Kingdom Hearts 2 is a massive game anyway, and you know, I've kind of barely scratched the surface of it, really. I've kind of done Pirates of the Caribbean kind of level
cool.
now. And yeah, I'm just kind of blasting through it, to be honest. Looking forward to completing it and then getting back onto Birth by Sleep, because I'd love to actually play that on a proper kind of full screen and whatnot.
Yeah.
Rather than just on the PSP.
Is Kingdom Hearts 2 the one that's got the Tron?
Yes.
Oh, right. That was more or less one of the only things that got, you know, piqued my interest. Is that always got Tron?
The Kingdom Hearts games are great. I love them.
They're incredibly convoluted and they have weird internal logic. I've probably already said this before, but you know, they kind of make a weird kind of sense in and of themselves.
It's like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
And it's kind of very heavy on the symbolism.
Yeah.
There's a lot of symbols involved in Kingdom Hearts.
Question.
Yep.
What the hell is the difference between Kingdom Hearts 2 and 2.5?
2.5, because there's the Kingdom Hearts 2.5 remix. That's the disc itself, which contains Kingdom Hearts 2 and Birth by Sleep and the cutscenes for Coded as well. It's basically the equivalent of the international version of it. So obviously the original had like the Japanese release, and then they did the international version of it, which was it's like added a couple of bits onto it, and then there was a re-release of the Japanese version with all those bits and more on.
Right.
So it's kind of the completest version of it. So
it's like Director's Cut Plus.
Yeah. For some reason, Square Enix have always kind of done that. They've kind of added in stuff between like launching in Japan and launching in the rest of the world. And then they've had to kind of relaunch in Japan with all of the extra stuff.
I've noticed that. The way I've looked at it is that, because especially they've done it with the Final Fantasy games.
Yes.
It seems to be that they've, you know, rushed to get the bugger out in Japan. And while they've been localizing and making sure that, you know, everything's, you know, still works and such, it's like they continue developing.
Mm.
So by the time the American version and the European versions come out, then, you know, they've got, a few tweaks and sometimes, you know, a few extra things.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, and then, of course, it comes back and it gets re-released in Japan with the, you know, the extra bits.
And more, yeah.
Yeah.
And then cool. The rest of the world is like, ah, damn you, Japan! So
awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've been playing Kingdom Hearts 2. It's going quite well. And, yeah.
Nice one.
All good.
Metroid.
Well, I have been watching lots of Supernatural.
Cool.
We've been doing at least two episodes a night.
So you're up to season 789 now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Season 789, as I've written in the notes. We've just been, you know, as soon as we've been reaching the end of a season, it's like, well, get the next box set ready, and then we can just watch. There we go. I have to say that I'm not sure if I said it at the time, but I thought the Leviathans were written off far too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That was just far too neat for all these. Oh my god, they're so scary! Oh, it's okay, we can make them explode. Game over. And it's just really, that's it.
Considering they're an uber powerful enemy as well, and it's still got like vampires and shit around.
Yeah, but they're uber powerful. You've had seasons and seasons of trying to deal with demons and especially yellow eyes.
Mm.
To start off with. And then, yeah, you just have a season of Leviathans and bang. And I was thinking, well, they've just, they've cut the head off the Hydra, so to speak.
Yeah.
So maybe there's going to be a lot more Leviathan things, coming up, but they're like in different factions now and not unified under, one. We've had bugger all.
You have to read fanfic to see that kind of thing happen.
That's a dangerous.
Mm.
Dangerous, dangerous, dangerous.
And then we were watching season. I'm trying not to, summarizing them and also not, particularly spoilering anything. But, all that lead up to the end of season 8.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's like, I love you. I love you too. Let's not do that. Okay, because we love each other. And then shit happens.
Wait, what?
Wait a minute. There was no incest in season 8, as far as I could tell.
That's furious typing on keyboards.
Where have you been getting these box sets from?
Sorry, furious what ing on keyboards? Typing. Right, okay, yeah. Yes. Cool.
I like
furious finger action on.
I like season 8 and then don't, because you got Benny, and a lot of people like Benny, but then thought he went too soon. Lots of people.
I thought it was weird. I thought there was going to be more to that, and then he's actually, I just want to go back now.
And lots of people were annoyed about the Amelia storyline, but to be fair, she wasn't. She was like less strong as a character than like Lisa had been back in season 6. So that kind of, yeah. Though at the same time, like Riot should have totally stayed, which was the dog that Sam ran over. And then like I think the coolest thing about season 8 is just you've got Hurt Sam as he slowly goes through the trials. Hurt Sam.
Oh. And he uses most of his facial expressions of acting.
Yep.
During that season.
Yep.
Because I will say, I think...
are you a Sam girl?
I think Dean is... bloke who plays Dean is a...
Jensen Ackles.
Jensen Ackles is a better actor than...
them fighting words!
I know. this is Dangerous Ice. I'm sorry. Or the silence.
Well, I'm just thinking about the fact that, like,
how, I'm in danger now,
how like, Jared Padalecki's had to play more different versions of his character than Jensen Ackles ever has for Dean.
Mm.
And also the fact that, like, the show is more about Dean anyway, so the opportunity Sam has to do anything.
I'm not saying that I think he's Shatner. I'm not saying that at all. I just think that I've forgotten his name. Dean. Can do more subtlety.
Mm.
So it's not like oh god, that guy's on the screen. Oh, Jesus. He's gonna gurn again, isn't he? It's not that. When you see everything squashed up, you start to form these opinions.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so you reach the there's all that lead up to the end of season 8, and it's just no, don't go through with the trials. Don't finish.
Yeah.
And it's just really seriously, you're just gonna drop it like there.
Like a whole plot hole with the thing there, because they didn't fully consider what the ramifications of closing the gates to hell were actually going to be. It was like, well, if you close the gates to hell, heaven's still going to be open, but like, what happens to all the really nasty ass souls that were meant to be going to hell because the people they were nasty assholes?
Presumably, either purgatory or heaven.
Well, that's a problem.
Assholes in heaven.
But then they wouldn't go to
purgatory. Let's screw with the order. There wasn't even any discussion about making it one way.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing.
It's generally considered to be one way for most characters.
Yeah, but when it comes to Supernatural, it's not, is it?
I don't know. I've never watched it.
I would recommend it.
Isn't something that's permanent unless, of course, you're... No, I'm not going to make a joke like that. I won't. It's too real.
It was
unless
nice...
you're an idiot.
Yes. It was nice to see someone return.
Hmm.
Even if it was just for the one episode.
Cool.
But yeah, we're just up to the moment of in season 9 where... a certain ghost has contacted them.
Oh, yes.
And I presume that ghost hangs around for quite a bit.
Mm.
No spoilers. No, spoilers, not on my watch.
You let it slip about, you know, time with season, you know, the end of season 9.
Say that again?
You let slip with timing about, you know, the end of season 9 with a breaking of a, you know, someone's shoulder, collarbone, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Damn it.
See? Ah!
Okay, anyway.
I am chill.
Yes.
So, yes, one more
thing for you, Atroid.
Well, I've got two things, but one of them is just
one. Rule breaker.
I watched Avengers 2 at the weekend, and I was very meh about it.
I quite enjoyed it. I watched it as well. I enjoyed it.
Although I will put my hands up and say that I was very meh about the first Avengers. First time I watched it, and then I rewatched it and I reevaluated. So who knows? Maybe I'll feel the same about Avengers 2. But
I actually quite like Scarlet Witch. I like their version of Scarlet Witch. She's good.
I thought she worked quite well, and it was bothering me where I recognised her from, and then I realised, oh, hang on, she's one of the Olsons, isn't she? Oh god,
younger sister.
Yeah, I remembered selling their shitty games in Electric when I worked there. To morons.
Oh, bless you. I thought Scarlet Witch worked really well in it. Quicksilver was pretty cool in it as well. And it set things up nicely for Captain America 3, definitely.
I'm still a little bit confused why they seem to be making the Captain America film so pivotal to the stories.
Yeah, well, Civil War will be, won't it?
Yeah, they seem to me almost like mini Avengers.
Yeah, 2.5.
Yeah, Avengers 2.5 remix.
They've been learning off Konami. Version. Square Enix. They've been learning off Square Enix, that's right.
Yeah. So it strikes me as weird there, because especially you have the new Avengers team at the end of Avengers 2?
Yes.
Assemble. I see what I did there. Several of them who were from Winter Soldier.
Mm. Mm.
Well, if I hadn't watched Winter Soldier, I wouldn't have a bloody clue who you were.
I have to say, though, I still preferred Ant-Man.
It could be a case with, the rushing of, Captain America as, you know, kind of Civil War. It could be a case of they wanted to do that before the Infinity Gauntlet. And they may have wanted to kind of get that out of the way before actually, you know, kind of continuing on.
Well, they've got a lot planned, haven't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, so, I watched, you know, so there's Avengers 2 out of the way. And, you know, this will not take long because I haven't actually done that much with it. But I'm calling it Project Fuckabout. In my capsule description way.
Yeah.
Because my lovely wife got me a soldering iron and such, because I've been very interested in doing electronics.
Mm-hmm.
I've been fiddling with, you know, one or two things, like, you know, buying little battery-powered radios and mono amplifiers from the pound shop, and then just taking them apart and seeing if I can, you know, link things together. Cool. And one of the things I did was I took two mono amplifiers, looked up the specs, and I've wired them together in such a way that they one powers the other in series, and instead of having two mono amplifiers, I've now got a stereo amplifier. So that's cool. That, you know, minor victory for me. And then I was looking around, and I found out that those little rear view parking monitors you can buy for cars. I was looking around and I happened to see one on eBay. It was a 5-inch widescreen LCD for £13 delivered.
Cool.
And I thought, well, if I'm wanting to piss about with anything with electronics, I'm going to have a screen in it.
Yeah.
So I thought, £13 for something like that, it's not something I'm relying on having around. If I can piss about with it, it's not too much lost. And so I ordered it, got it at the end of last week, I've taken it apart. It was swearing blind all across the internet that it required 12 volts, which is the standard voltage in a car. Hmm. And I from years back, you know, the LED, you know, portable games that we'd have, you know, like Space Invaders and Pokemon, you know,
Mario Cement Factory.
Yeah, I had one of those Uniross multivolt power adapters to stop going through batteries because everything ran on batteries. And,
unfortunately.
Yes, and it, you know, games like that would eat through them. So I still had my Uniross multivolt thingy, and I hooked that up and I set up some wires and I went around prodding on the board after I, you know, prized this bloody thing apart. And I managed to find that it, this 12 volt only little monitor would run on 5.
Oh, wicked.
And as it turned out, I found out that with a bit of fiddling, I stripped out an old USB cable I had and applied the 5 volt and the ground to the board and found out that this little LCD will run on USB power.
Nice.
Now, this is where it gets a little bit dicey.
Right.
Because I found that out, and it was like, it's awesome, but it didn't have much in the way of solder on it. I've ordered some lead-based solder, which, of course, is what China still uses, because this is from China. But yeah. I've only got lead-free solder, and I found that they don't really mix that well. As a consequence, I've managed to solder wires to the board of this in a stripped mini LCD monitor. Mm. And it won't work properly.
Oh, no.
So, that's where it basically stops. Because, I've basically reached the limit of what I'm happy with and, you know, what I can manage. So,
you'll get there.
Yeah.
I have faith in you.
Well, that's why I've called it Project Fuckabout, because it is just... It's me experimenting and prodding it in a circuit board and seeing what I can get it to do. And it's just stopped. So that's it.
Awesome.
So I don't know what I'm doing with it. I don't know what my aim is. I'm just seeing what I can get things to do.
So this week you've got to watch Sliders and do more on Project Fuckabout ready for next week. Cool.
I'm probably going to wait until some of the things I've ordered are... You know, for my little project, you know, so I'm going to try cleaning it up and using different solder. But, you know, in the meantime, it's a bit pointless trying to get it to do what I want because I don't think I can, not with what I've got.
Fair enough. Cool. Nice one. As discussed, I watched Avengers 2. I liked it, but I preferred Ant-Man. I always watched Terminator Genesis, and I feel really guilty because I fell asleep halfway through it.
Oh, but then the time travel won't make any sense. It will.
What time travel?
Just joke.
That's when I fell asleep. I fell asleep in the 80s as they were about to time travel and woke up right at the end.
I could make a joke there, but I'm not going.
It looked quite good, actually, from what I saw of it, so I'll have to do something about watching it again. It looked quite good as a reboot or as a reimagining. It had some good nods to the original film that I saw at the beginning. So I was quite pleased. And then I kicked myself because I fell asleep. Which is always good.
Well, maybe when it comes out on Blu-ray or something, you can...
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's what I'll have to do. So that's all we've got time for. So it's goodbye from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood, who doesn't know when to shut up. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net, Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me.
It's good night.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I'll go there, if that's all right.
See, that wasn't my fault.
Yes. No. That was the show notes fault.
That wasn't my fault there.
That is the show notes fault.
I was reading it.
Yeah. My fault because they did the show.
No, it's my fault for being stupid.
It was my fault. It's my fault. Okay, it's.
I agree. It's everyone else's fault.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. And I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter @EK6891.
And it's good night for me, Paul, aka one_armed_cookie on Twitter. You can also find show notes over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. Do you tweet at us? We like to read out tweets, and you can also find us on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. And, also, and don't forget...
Yep, sorry, carry on.
Don't forget episode 150, when we're going to pick out our standout British films, including Straw Dogs, Cornetto Trilogy, Trainspotting, and Never Let Me Go.
Good night.
Better let you go.
Good night.
Good night.
We'll not let you go.
Cool, yeah.